like to remind all participants today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon. On today's Who Is webinar on Tuesday, the 20th of April, we have Hugo Salgado, Jim Pendergast, Suzanne Payne, Michaela Nalon, Chandra Watson. From staff, we have Steve Sheng, Liz Gaster, Dave Piscatello, Seth Green, Julie Headland, and Tom Behrens. If I could please remind everyone to press star 6 to mute and star 6 to unmute as well in order to cause as little disruption on the lines as possible. And also, when you do speak, to please state your names for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Liz.
Thank you. Again, thanks for participating in this webinar. This is the first of two webinars that we'll be conducting on a report that Steve Sheng has just prepared that we're calling a draft inventory of Who Is service requirements. The second will be on May 4th at a time that is hopefully friendlier for other parts of the world and will contain exactly the same content. There will be an opportunity for comments and questions at the end of the presentation, but if you have clarifying questions, you may raise your hand in the Adobe by clicking on the My Status, and you'll see a little hand-raising option, or you may put your question, type your question yourself into the chat, or we will hear you if you unmute your line in the audio and just jump in with a question, but we would like those just to be clarifying questions while Steve is presenting. And I want to just very quickly set the stage with the background and the purpose of this report and why it was developed, and then Steve will go into the details of the report itself. Basically, last year, first of all, in March of last year, the GNSO Council decided that we needed to determine cost and feasibility to do a number of different studies of Who Is that would look at certain factual aspects of Who Is and hopefully provide a factual basis for further policy making on Who Is. And then subsequently, just 2 months later, in May of 2009, the Council requested this report as a follow-on to looking at the cost and feasibility of these other studies. This was a report that was unique and not related to those other studies in the sense that it really asked staff to collect and organize a comprehensive set of requirements for the Who Is service policy tools that would reflect not only existing requirements and known deficiencies in current Who Is service, but the report should also include any possible requirements that may be needed to support various policy initiatives that have been suggested in the past. So these would be the technical requirements that might be needed to support these various policy initiatives. When the GNSO in May of 2009 requested this report, they also asked that staff consult with the ESAC, the ALAC, the GAC, the CCNSO, and of course the GNSO, and prepare a straw man proposal in advance of that consultation, then take that consultation and produce a final report. So what you're seeing today is an overview of the initial report. We are in consultation with each of those SOs and ACs. We are asking for them to provide their feedback by the 17th of May, and then we'll be compiling a final report based on all of that input that we got. So I just wanted to provide that background and turn it over to Steve Sheng now to conduct the overview. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. As Liz just mentioned, the goal of this report is to collect and organize a set of requirements for community consideration. These features come from three areas. The first area is the current features that identified as needing improvement, so any potential deficiencies in the current Who Is. And the second aspect is features to support various past policy proposals. And the last one is features recommended by ICANN supporting organizations and the advisory committee. Okay, so moving on, just want to quickly qualify that the goal of this report is not gathering policy requirement nor recommending policy. I just want to take the tiered access as an example to illustrate this point, because this is an important point. So from the policy perspective, for the tiered access, you know, we may have requirements, say law enforcement gave access to certain WHOIS data. Now that's a policy requirement. From the operational perspective, you know, we need to answer questions like who is law enforcement, and how to certify certain law enforcement entities, especially there in other countries. Finally, from a technical perspective, the goal is to find the best technology that can support such access. So this will include frameworks to authenticate users and to give proper access based on their roles. And it's these technical areas that this report is primarily concerned with. So continuing on slide 5, I want to further clarify our scope. In the WHOIS deliberations, people could mean different things when they talk about the WHOIS service. So for the technical community, they generally tend to think WHOIS in terms of clients and servers that implement the WHOIS protocol. So some of the clients we have are, for example, Port 43 clients. We have a web-based clients as well, and increasingly we have automation clients. Some of them are legitimate, and some not. So when the policy community debate about WHOIS, they tend to view it as the data or this single database that serves the registration data. So they will be concerned with issues such as, you know, data accuracy, malicious use. I want to clarify, since our goal is to look at the future of WHOIS, it's fitting for us to consider the potential improvements in all of these areas. Although we will only be focusing on primarily on the technical, the protocol level. I still hear some people couldn't hear the conference. There are some in the chat.
Yeah, I think maybe part of the problem, Ms. Liz, is that people aren't dialing the separate number that's needed for the audio. Unless we can confirm from the operator on the audio, Tanya, that if there are people who are still in queue to get into this call.
Actually, all participants are dialed in and connected right now.
Okay,
and there are one more person is dialing in right now, actually. There's one person standing by. We'll place them in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So on slide 6, here's the rough outline of my presentation. First, I'm going to talk about the need for a mechanism to find authoritative WHOIS servers. And the next 4 points are similar in that they're all concerned with standardizations. So the original WHOIS protocol is simple and leaves most of these decisions to the servers and clients that implement the protocol. So there's quite a variability among these different implementations, and such variability creates no uniform experience for the users. Those are the next 4 points. So moving on, slide 7, we're going to talk about the quality of the domain registration data, and primarily from the technical perspective, how they can be improved through technical means. Of course, the elephant in the room is the issues of internationalization. There is a IRD working group called Internationalized Registration Data Working Group. that are actively deliberating on this issue. So in this presentation, I will not discuss too much. I will highlight the problem, and we will defer to their recommendations. And following that, I'm going to talk about security, Beacon Xinhuis, and finish with registrar abuse point of contact. So to begin, let's start with the first point, mechanism to find authoritative WHOIS servers. So the problem is simple. Currently, there's not an easy way to find an updated list of the domain names and IP addresses of WHOIS servers authoritative for a given zone. There are previous lists exist. For example, there's the MIT list. There are some other lists compiled from third parties. However, those lists are not updated very frequently. I just did a test this morning and find some of those are already outdated. So as a result of this, when clients want to find the right WHOIS server, they often rely on a combination of heuristics and also hardware tables, you know, which are not often updated, and some use DNS records to find WHOIS servers. This is particularly problematic for the new gTLDs, as potentially the top-level domains open up, the top-level registries could be expanded significantly, and finding all the WHOIS servers for these registries and the registrars offering those could be quite a challenge. This also poses a challenge for legitimate automation clients. So our recommendation, recommendation from the experts in the community and past reports, is to provide a public accessible and machine possible list of domain names or IP locations for these WHOIS servers. We recognize that ICANN has no contractual power for ccTLDs for RNRs. However, we hope this could be a good practice that we can also include them as well. So that's the first requirement. On slide 10, we're going to talk about structured queries. So the issue here is the WHOIS server applications varied with the respect how they are expecting clients to submit the query. So, for example, I list two examples here. The first example, to find autonomous system number in ARIN, you have to query a certain way, for example, with the prefix A. And if you want to do the same query for RIPE, you have to add a flag, you know, dash T, autonomous number, and then the query the AS number. We have similar issues, for example, to control the response for the IDNs. So the .dk, the Denmark registry, you know, have a flag called character set, and you have to specify what character set. .jp have a different kind of way to handle that, and so is .de. So these servers have, they expect the client to be able to accommodate this, and sometimes client wouldn't be able to accommodate for those. So this has a negative impact on the user experience. And the recommendation here is we think user would benefit from a standard query structure. So for example, a user may wish to submit a list of domains to check for the creation date of these domains. With a standard structure, he or she can do so without worrying about the specific syntax to do this at each of these WHOIS servers. And that's why we think it's important. So on slide 12, along with the lines of the standard query format, there has been passed GNSO WHOIS working groups and ASEC reports have called for expanded query capabilities beyond the simple domain names. And some registries have already expanded their search capabilities. for example, the .mobi registry. The recommendation here is we want to standardize that capability to permit users to submit not only domain names as arguments to search functions, but other to search, you know, other than other registration data elements as well. So that's an inventory. Moving on, structured responses. The problem today is there's no standard format for data that registrars and registries return for Whois queries. The protocol does not specify that, and it's up to the individual servers to implement that. So there's quite some variability. If you have done Whois queries, for example, for a .com domain or for a .org domain, you can see such a difference. You know, the data are named, data elements are named differently in different responses, and they're formatted differently as well. So the compilation here is to define a standard data structure for these Whois responses that can uniquely identify the data and avoid the ambiguity that comes with lack of standardization with the correct syntax and correct semantics. So on slide 15, we talk about standardized errors. Currently, there's no standard set of error messages defined for Whois servers, and they may handle errors differently. So, for example, when a Whois client exceeded the limit, some servers will not return the query at all. So you just kind of silently ignore the query. Others will return an error message specific to that server provider. Still others will simply close the connection. So this lack of standard error introduces ambiguity and somewhat confusion especially for the users. And the compilation here is define a set of standardized error messages and standard handling of error conditions. I want to call out just to give an analogy for other protocols. For example, the HTTP protocol. You know, the errors are very well standardized. You know, from 100 to 200, 400, the usual 404 you get when there's no such a page, and there's 500. The different errors are very well specified, and I think it's along the same reasoning for improvement of Whois that we are putting this compilation requirement. So those, I just finished talking about the four areas for standardization, standardized query format, standardized query capability, standard output, and standard error handling. Next, I'm going to move on to the data side a little bit. I mean, ultimately, the usefulness of Whois really lies in the quality of its data. And there are a couple of elements for the quality. Is the data accurate? So that's the accuracy. Is the data useful? The relevancy. And are the collected data current? So I'm going to go through each of these points quickly. So first I'm going to talk about data accuracy. There have been increasingly concerns about the accuracy of the Whois data. So we know originally the Government Accounting Office did the Whois accuracy study and find that there are some inaccuracies. And recently we have the NORC report, and I think the GAO is doing redoing its study in 2005 again. There are a couple of reasons for Whois data to be inaccurate. The primary one is the privacy considerations. where individual users are concerned about their privacy, so they put inaccurate information into the Whois. The second reason I would call it the stealth, that means the intentional deception from the malicious users. There are other reasons. The third one is there's currently little or no corroboration of the submitted data. Our registrars or registries simply take the data given by the user and put it in the Whois system. And last but not least is the user error. So we asked the question, from a technical perspective, point two, we probably couldn't do as much to improve accuracy. But we can do something to for point three and four, little corroboration or submitted data or user error. So moving on to the relevance of the Whois data. Certain registration data are not as useful today as they were 20 years ago. For example, you know, the fax information. Not many are using fax now. And so we think there may be, it could a need for futures Whois to include other data as well. And to prepare for that, from a data model perspective, we should accommodate extensibility and changeability. So the compilation is adopt a structured data model for Whois data that provides extensibility and changeability properties. So here, the structured data model can also improve accuracy somewhat. For example, the structured model can say, you know, this is the way a telephone number or an email address or a record that needs to be inputted that. So with that standard and with some kind of client-side checking by the registrar, we can at least make sure that user are not making, we can catch the user errors, you know, at the earlier stage before they propagate into the Whois system. So I'm going to briefly talk about internationalization. I'm on slide 21. Currently, the problem is there's no standard exists today for handling the submission and display of registration data from local languages and scripts. So we have some Whois applications or services. They may not support the domain names in U labels. So a user may not be able to query the Whois with a U label, the IDN U label. And it may not return that result in a U label as well. So many applications, they cannot accept or display when characters set other than US ASCII 7. And some of these clients, the problem is they use local encodings rather than Unicode. So if I'm a terminal to use Whois client, I have to set beforehand the terminal to accept the correct encodings beforehand. You know, there are Unicode is one, but there are like hundreds of other local encodings. And we can imagine the problem that this could create. So the International Registration Data Working Group is currently considering these technical and also policy issues. And for the purpose of our document, we will defer to that for their recommendations. I'm on slide 23. Next, I'm going to talk about security. The problem today is currently Whois require no identity assertion. There's no credentialing or no authentication. There's no built-in security at all. And however, recently there's a growing need for security. For example, there's a growing need to protect the privacy of the registrants, right? So here we talk about, you know, earlier on about the quality of the Whois information, and one of the primary barriers is the privacy concern. So we want to, there are calls to mitigate that in past the ASAC reports. And there's also a need call to discourage harvesting and mining. Currently, the registrars are doing this mostly through rate limiting of IP addresses. But there are, you know, from a security perspective, rate limiting using IP address as the authenticator have many problems. It can easily be circumvented. So there's a need for that. And finally, there have been past proposals to provide differentiated access. So this is the tiered access model that I've mentioned very early beginning of the presentation. And to be able to do that and do these, realize these functionalities, security is no longer kind of a side conversation. It kind of come to an essential part of this service. So there are three areas of security, or there are actually four, but usually named the Quad A requirements, but we only list three of them here. The first one is authentication. Basically, given to prove that the people who are using the system are the ones that they claim to be or you are given access to. So the second aspect is access control, giving the right people the right access to certain data elements. And finally, there needs to be auditing framework to make sure when errors are done, we can correct it. It's a long slide. Slide 26 will list the compilations here. The first is to define an authentication framework. And the second is to support an authorization framework that is capable of implementing granular permissions. So this requirement is important, really, for the tiered access because we need to put granular, per registration data object permission for access control. So if any of these policies were to go through the consensus process, we have enough technical capability to implement that. And finally is to define a framework and baseline set of metrics that can accommodate future policy development for auditing of who is access. I'm going to skip the thick and thin whois and talk about the registrar abuse point of contact. The compilation is from past ASAC report and also from the DAC 3 in the new GTLD applicants, basically asking registrars and registries provide and publish abuse point of contact information as the element of domain registration record. So the background here is increasingly the domain name is being used increasingly as one element in the global electronic crime ecosystem. And so that these crime fighters, for example, law enforcement, usually need to get in touch with registrars and registries to handle these issues. So with a kind of abuse point of contact information published, they can find the right person that can speed up this process. And in the electronic crime research, we know that really time is essentially the essence in stopping the crime. So I've just kind of gave a brief overview of these various compilations, and for the interest of time, I've omitted many details, and you can refer them into the paper, especially for the justifications and the references where these recommendations coming from. So the next steps for this report, as Liz mentioned early, we already released the draft report in March 2010. We are conducting overview webinars. Today is one, and we'll do another one on May 10, mostly for audiences in Europe and Asia and Australia. And we're now consulting with various supporting organizations and advisory committees on the report, and we plan to release a final report by the Brussels meeting incorporating the input of the feedbacks. So again, we value your feedback very much. I think the particularly we value your input on, you know, whether we have, you know, adequately identified the origins of this requirement. And also, did we miss any important requirements or improvement to WHOIS that has been discussed to date? And with that note, I want to open up for questions.
Steve, thank you so much. It's Liz Gaster. I just want to encourage people who do have questions about the report, the genesis, the purpose, the goals, or any of the content to feel free to ask or to comment on the report. We are very interested in the views of the community on this, and there will be, again, also for those of you who are representatives of active and supporting organizations or advisory committees, also to encourage you to encourage your organization to provide input and guidance on the utility of this and how, and even next steps. I see Sebastian has a question, so let's go to you, Sebastian. Hello.
Hello, Liz. Can you hear me?
Very well. Bonjour.
Okay. Bonjour. I have one question. You don't talk at all about, and first of all, I need to say that I am not a specialist of WHOIS, you don't talk at all about the other possibility like IRIS or IRIS. And is it on purpose, or is it because it's something completely different, or because it seems to me that with this presentation, we are building a new WHOIS, and maybe like IPv4 to IPv6, we need not to build IPv6, but IPv something else, 8, 10, 12, I don't know. And it's the same thing for WHOIS. Maybe we need to build a new system than trying to find a way to solve the problem of this very old WHOIS system. But it's really a question. I have no idea.
I think it's a very good question. It's Liz, and I'm going to take the first swipe at answering and then turn it to Steve. I think that when the GNSO requested that this compilation be done, they were actually very careful not to they were certainly thinking about the future and, the increasing, I guess, obsolescence of the current technical protocol on WHOIS and wanting to be, you know, responsible and responsive to that evolving situation in looking at next steps. But I think they viewed this compilation as a necessary prerequisite to presupposing what, replacements for WHOIS might be. And I think it's very important to for the GNSO and for the other supporting organizations and ACs that have an interest in this to provide your thoughts about how this might be useful in pursuing that question. Is it IRIS? Is it a modification of IRIS? Is it some? Are there things that can be done with the existing protocol that I think Steve even alluded to that might be helpful in the very short run? Are there other options entirely that should be looked at also? But I think the direction you're going in with your question is the direction the GNSO wants to go in, but with this as a preliminary step.
This is Steve. I think that's an excellent question, and Liz covered it very well. So we are not, we're only compiling the requirement, and it may be that the current WHOIS, no matter how hard we try to improve it, may not meet this requirement. And that's setting up a stage for other protocols. Thanks.
I believe Michele has a comment, question. Go ahead, Michele.
Yeah, hi. It's an interesting presentation. I mean, one thing, I think some of the concepts that are being put out here are very, very valid. I mean, things like format and other things. There's a couple of questions that it does leave me with. I mean, things like, have you looked at things like DAC and other systems that are being used by some of the other registries? The other thing as well is, have you defined to what purpose who is should serve? Because the problem is that who is used for a lot of things that it probably isn't really designed to do. In other words, you have people using it to check domain availability, and they have people using it to pull out other bits of data. And I'd also be a bit fearful about extending which objects one could query in a public whois, because that opens up a huge can of worms in terms of privacy.
Hello, this is Steve. Again, these are excellent questions. I didn't quite hear the first question, but I want to comment on the second question. You mentioned about, for example, increasing the query capacity of Whois, and I think I would encourage you to submit those comments to us, and we will include that in the report. The issue I think you're talking, if I understand correctly, is really the function creep that Whois currently today is used for many of the purposes that are not originally intended, and you're calling for re-examining those purposes. We can do that. There are some past Whois policy work in those areas as well. Yeah.
Just to clarify, my first thing was with relation to DAC as opposed to standard Whois. I mean, it's for doing lookups. So, for example, both Nominet and URID provide it. I mean, it gives a basic... It's a much more basic response. I mean, it's just going to go yes, no, that type of way, in terms of availability checks.
Right.
The Nominet implementation also specifies that you have to pass certain information across to the server.
Okay.
So that the client has to pass a certain data across.
Okay.
So they can track usage. Plus, it also has restrictions on IPs and various other things, depending on which service you're looking at.
Okay. I'm very interested in pursuing this further, and if we can talk about this offline, and we can we can discuss more about this. Thanks.
Okay. So we have a comment from Avri. Avri, please go ahead.
Okay, yeah, thanks, and thanks for the presentation. Yeah, if I'm understanding correctly, this look that's being done is of what the basic technical capabilities would be and what kind of internal, let's say, software architecture, software structure, database structure, what have you, that you would need in place to meet these requirements. So, in other words, when people start talking about variable access and stuff like that, those would be capabilities that you would need to sort of add to this list. Is that correct?
So Avery, so for example, again, take the tiered access, for example, I think it's where you're referring to. This report is primarily concerned with the technical, defining kind of a technical requirements to be able to realize those functionalities. So we talk about, authentication. We talk about, a per object access control need to build in. So if those policies, you know, or proposals become policy through a consensus process, we are able to, you know, actually implement those and meet its policy objectives.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So in terms of the last question you got, how I would have understood that, and I don't know if I understood it correctly, would mean that you'd even have to have a lower set of access that says, you know, the minimal answer is yes, no, and if you've got no access higher than that, that would be all that one could get. So that would be something that would be built into your access capabilities. Is that a reasonable way of looking at it? So it wouldn't just be, I mean, I guess it is tiered, and the tiered is basically lowest tier is nothing but yes, no.
I think not even that. I think that's not a technical question. That's more of an operational and policy question of what do you return. And, you know, for us, we really want to, you know, even laying out the capabilities of the technology to be support any of those scenarios,
okay.
Whatever those scenarios will be given to us. Does that answer your question?
I think so. So including, you would have to have attributes on both the kind of thing you did and the kind of access that a person did, and they'd have to be fine-tuned enough so that one could create any number of different operational policies.
Yes.
Thank you.
Aubrey, you asked another question about it's not sufficient to submit the questions during these discussions. I want to make sure we answer that, and I'm not sure I understand it, and then we'll go to Luis and the others in queue. Did we answer that?
My question there was basically, at one point, when there was a previous question, someone says, well, please send that in to us. And so my immediately question is, having brought up the question within this forum, does one also need to write it up to make sure that it is considered later on?
I thought it was more clarification on the specifics of the question.
Nope, it was process issue.
Yeah, okay. But really, questions on this call will be considered, and questions on the next call that we have on the 4th will also be considered in Steve's subsequent final write-up. So thanks for everyone who's participating in this. I believe Luis is next in the queue. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yes. I have a question. Why, because in the of define a new protocol, don't you use a kind of web service based on XML? That's my question.
Thank you, Luis, for that question. Again, we are not limiting ourselves to the kinds of solutions. So, for example, the one you mentioned, there's a RESTful who is that's currently being tested by Aaron, and that use the HTTP, you know, RESTful who is protocol, and you know that could be a potential area, you know, to look into. I mean, the purpose of the document is to set the kind of requirements. We do not preclude the kinds of technologies that will fulfill these requirements to merely who is. Thank you.
I think the next question is from Tom Best. Tom, please go ahead.
Hi there. Not so much a question, just maybe an operational or even a policy suggestion. And it relates directly to the tiered access idea. Obviously, I think that regardless of the entity or the level of access, there'll be, you know, a certain level of participation, which will be or should be mandatory, and I would think that participation, the level of participation would become much more substantial as you rise to the level of infrastructure operators, people that actually are bringing routing domains or things like that. But within the tiers themselves, perhaps it might be useful to consider kind of a symmetrical access for participation policy, so that the degree of participation contribution to the timeliness, completeness, and accuracy of the database itself is basically defines your level of visibility into the rest of it. It seems to me that actually that would be a mechanism like that might be useful to improve on the margin reduce on the margin the risks of abusive uses of Whois, and also might create a kind of a mild virtuous feedback loop which would encourage people to participate more actively. Given the fact that you're facing probably going to be quite a challenge, shall we say, to achieve and substantially higher levels of accuracy, timeliness, completeness with the Whois database in general, it seems like any little mechanism like this might help on the margin would be worth considering. That's it. That was just a suggestion.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. This is very helpful. I think we can discuss this offline through emails. There's probably more technical involved and will take a lot more time than here.
Right. So if you wanted to have more of a dialogue with Steve offline, that's with technical, especially technical input, you're welcome to do that at steve.sheng@icann.org. Feel free to, it's not required at all. We're capturing the discussion, but if you do have more detail on the, especially on the technical side, we welcome that. Adam Scoville is next in queue. Adam, please go ahead.
Hi, I have what I think is just a sort of process question in terms of you sort of identified a number of some of the technical issues that need to be overcome or considered, and some of them seem somewhat simple and some of them seem somewhat harder. And I guess my question is just in terms of next steps, I could see some of them saying, okay, we can figure out how we could do this, and others where you might say, okay, this is somewhat more difficult and it might be better to decide whether we want that on a policy side or not before we go through the brain damage of figuring out the technical aspect. So I guess it's sort of a process and which comes first, the chicken or the egg sort of question in terms of developing the technical side versus determining that the technical capability is needed. Do you understand my question?
Yes. Let me see if I can answer that. And I, others, feel free to, I think from my background is a technologist, and going through this access exercise, some of these areas, for example, providing a machine parsable list of Whois servers is fairly trivial to do, and others such as security will be harder, or in terms of different queries will be harder. However, I don't think technology is the limiting factor here. So I think it's more of a policy and operationally whether these policies these proposals can become consensus policy. But technology is not the limiting factor here.
Well, I guess my question is, even beyond, take this example you have on the screen now, the tiered access example, even below the policy and even the operational level, I could imagine, detailed sort of certification authorities and digital signatures and credentials that might go along with implementing different levels of access, and I could just sort of see that not being a trivial sort of task, and what you'd envision in terms of the order in terms of developing that in before or after the policy requirements and so forth? Because I can just imagine that being a daunting even just on a purely technical level.
Yeah, so it's Liz, and I'm going to just jump in briefly, and Steve, please continue. But I think you're right, Adam, in, you know, what I hear you raising is kind of a chicken and egg question about the policy versus the technology. And I think that's something for the GNSO Council to consider and talk about as far as what the next steps, once this report is finalized, how does this create or help a path forward, either, you know, on the technical or policy fronts or both. And I think it would be extremely helpful for you through your, you know, GNSO representatives in particular to encourage that dialogue in the GNSO. I think Steve and I, you know, as we just spent the time analyzing this over the last month, are also thinking about whether certain changes that might be made, technical changes might be made, which ones really require decision-making on policy in order to implement any structure versus others that might be useful purely for what they bring to the table technically and operationally that may not require policy decisions to be made in advance. But you're raising a very complicated and valuable point that I think does need to be considered as far as next steps by the council. I don't think it's something that we can really answer here other than to emphasize that what we've tried to do, and I think that was sort of the crux of Aubrey's question too, is get to what the technical parameters in theory would be needed to support kind of any and all or, you know, rough approximations of what policy recommendations would require in the way of a technical foundation in the future. And that's, you know, that there are vagaries there that definitely require more discussion and consideration by the community.
Thanks.
We have Sebastian again with another question. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. It's to suggest that I was in charge in 2003-04 to coordinate a team for the evaluation of the new GTLD, and I know that one part of the technical side of the team made a quite important study on who is to know to compare the who is of the new GTLD and the so-called old GTLD, and maybe it could be useful that we exchange with Steve on that. And more generally, there are maybe a study already done. I know some of them are public, but it could be useful not so much about the result, but how they do it and what was the technical side of those study. If it could be useful, I will be ready to discuss with you. It will be better if we can do that in Brussels, but if it's done before, I will be happy to help you.
Oh, and I should have mentioned early on, we are going to do a workshop on, it's Liz again, on this report in Brussels. We hope to have the final report done so that we can share all of what the input that we got, in a sense, and by final, you know, it'll be a draft final for input and discussion in Brussels. Thank you.
Thank you. I very much appreciate that effort. And if we could discuss offline, that would be great. Thanks.
Do we have other questions and or comments or thoughts? Again, I want to encourage people to read the report, to offer their thoughts about, especially to the council, and I think the council members would appreciate thoughts from the community about next steps, especially recognizing, you know, that things need to move in a sense that may be in parallel with talking about policy, but talking about the technical and operational too. So thank you so much. Michele, do you have one more?
Yeah, is there a comment period or something open on this report at present, or how is that structured?
It's actually, there's not a comment period open, although we'd be happy to open one if the GNSO asks us to. It was really, this is being done at the request of the GNSO in this resolution that they passed in May, May 7th, and that which is this consultation with the SOs and ACs. We've added these webinars because we do want to make this report, the contents of this report, as accessible and make people aware as much as possible in the community about what we're doing here. And so that's why we'll take all these comments that we get, and we'll, of course, take any comments directed at us to my email, to Steve's email, or to policy-staff@ICANN.org between now and May 17th. And if you do think that the council should open a public comment period, feel free to urge your council members to encourage that, which we'd welcome.
Okay, thanks.
Any other closing comments? Thank you so much to everyone for participating. Steve, thank you so much for your presentation, and Gisela and Scott for your support.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.